Again, this is Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 3, text 17. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Please repeat. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Per quote by Srila Prabhupada. A person who is fully Krishna conscious, and the word fully here is in italics, and is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness, no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. Such a Krishna-conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. Om jnana-timirandhasya jnananjana-shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruh Shri Yudhaparakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sāgvaitam sāvadhūtam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha krishna padam sahagana lalita Shri Vishakham vidam cha He krishna karuna sindho dinabandho jagatpate Gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpadarupyashcha Kripasindhupya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yastu Atmaratareva Syad Atma Trittasya Manavah Atmanyeva Cha Sampustasya Karyam Navidyate But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. This is a very key verse of the Bhagavad Gita. It's been commented at great length by all the great acharyas, and Krishna's a little bit shifting gears here whenever we see the word tu. In Sanskrit it means however, means there's a contrast being made. Because up until this point, in the beginning several verses of this chapter, Krishna has been making it very clear that a person is actually better situated when he's acting properly according to the principles of Dharma. Arjuna, of course, was confused, and he asks the same question in different ways, not only once in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it better to give up activity altogether, or is it better to perform activity in Krishna consciousness, or activities for the purpose of yajna? So please tell me clearly, I'm bewildered. I want to know what's going on, because I'm about to kill my relatives. And I don't really want to do that unless it's clear that I have to do this. So he's in an extreme circumstance, of course. But all of us are actually being instructed through Arjuna. As Prabhupada often explains, the mother-in-law teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. And similarly, Krishna instructs all of humanity by instructing one of his best devotees, in this case Arjuna. So Krishna is answering, I've already told you there's two kinds of people. Some are inclined towards jnana and other people are more practical. And most people are of the latter type. So Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this verse, he brings our attention to the statement that Krishna has already made in text 4. Navkarmanam anadam pam naishkarmiyam purushoshnute nachasanyasanadeva siddhim sabhatigachati. Not merely by abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. That's what we call passive aggression. Everybody knows that sometimes you can effect massive damage if you simply do nothing in a particular circumstance. So Krishna is making this point here. It's not just by abstaining from work that you can become freedom from reaction, because you will be culpable for whatever you cause to happen, even by non-performance of duty. And this is why he's also already stated, Niyatam Kuru Karma Tvam Ityadi. You have to do your regular daily activities. What is enjoined for you to do, according to the principles of Dharma, you have to do that. And if you don't do that, you will get sinful reaction. This, we know, was the basis of Arjuna's initial argument in chapter 1. He's saying that I don't know what to do. I don't want to kill my relatives, but at the same time, I don't really want to incur sinful reaction either. And Krishna is also appealing to the same principle later on in chapter 2 and elsewhere. He says, Arjuna, if you don't fight, then you're going to have that reaction on your head as well. So it's not just a matter of not acting. And moreover, he says, nor by renunciation alone can you attain perfection. Even if you are trying to become renounced from the fruits of your activities, if you're not actually properly situated, then you cannot attain perfection. Nasa siddhim, Krishna says. In chapter 16, when Krishna is instructing us, how do we know what to do and when? Anybody know the verse I'm thinking of? Chapter 16. Huh? It's at the end of chapter 16. That's enough of a hint. I'll read it for you. you're close. Yashastra vidham utsrijya vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham naparam gatim. If a person rejects what the Shastra tells him to do and acts either out of whimsical lust, kama karata, or for whatever reason, he says he's not going to get perfection, he's not even going to be happy. And in this chapter as well, Krishna has already said, well, he's in the next verse actually, he says, Nahi kaschit kshanamapi ityadi jatu tishtatya karma kripta karyate hiyavashaha karma sarva prakati jayarganaihi. Everyone is impelled by certain modes of material nature to act in a certain way, and even if you try to stop acting, you will be impelled, according to your nature, to act. And he tells Arjuna this a few times in Bhagavad Gita. Considering that you're a kshatriya, you're going to get into a fight with someone. So you might as well fight on religious principles, and in that way you become elevated, you set a good example, everything becomes auspicious. I think it was this morning, and I don't remember if it was the English, I think it was the Hindi class, he was mentioning that dharma, the meaning of the word dharma means to maintain. So if you want sustenance, happy sustenance in this material world, it has to be through the agency of dharma, because that is the agency that affects happiness in a sustainable manner. Dhri, the verbal root is dhri, which means to sustain something. So, what is that? Dharma rakshati rakshitaha, the Vedic saying, I think it's from the Manusmriti or something. Anyway, so that's the idea. This, up until this point, Krishna has been emphasizing the importance of this activity. Even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, also takes it as granted that this is necessary. He says, Tadevam nishkama dvasamartye sakamopi karma karyare vetyotam. It's already been stated that because it's obligatory, it's mandatory for everyone to perform his activity. Then even if you cannot come to the stage of acting without fruitive desires, still you should act with desires but according to dharma. This is the idea. This is his opening statement of his commentary. He kind of acquiesces that implicitly. Now, this verse is interesting because Krishna is making a contrast, as we've mentioned already. But if someone actually takes pleasure only in the self, what kind of person? A manavaha. What does manavaha mean? Somebody who follows manu. In other words, somebody who follows the principles of dharma is called manavaha. It is not a biological status to be a human being. It is adherence to the codes of dharma. And dharma does not exactly mean religion. I was listening to Prabhupada this morning, who was explaining in a lecture he gave in 1969 in Columbus, Ohio, of all places. He said this idea of the word dharma, it's not very clear. People take it as religion or maybe as faith, but actually dharma means the intrinsic property of a thing. From a scientific perspective, it means the intrinsic nature of something. It's lakshana, it's sarup. So we all have, even in our conditional existence, we all have a particular lakshana, a particular characteristic that we cannot avoid, as long as we are conditioned in a certain manner. That will change over time. Sangat samjayate kama, in accordance with the association that we keep, we develop desires. In response to the desires that arise within our heart, we act, and by acting we plant seeds for the reaction in the form of good or bad karma. And so we mutate from life after life. Our, what we call our svabhava, it morphs over time, very slowly. But in every single body that we take, the body itself being the tangible manifestation of our prarabdha karma, in every single body that we have, our svabhava has a corresponding set of obligatory actions that are known as svadharma. And this is not religion. This is not belief. This is science. It's very poorly understood metaphysics. And it's a very important subject matter, which is probably one of the many, many, many reasons that Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing the importance of understanding and implementing these things in his International Society for Krishna Consciousness, especially in the last 3 years that he was on this planet, in which he gave roughly 80% of his instructions on this topic. Something to think about. Anyway, so Krishna here is kind of shifting gears, and he's telling us about someone else. The acharyas have, every single one of them, taken very great pains to point out for us. In most cases, they're each of them saying the same thing in 3 or 4 different ways, just to make sure that it's inescapable. So let's begin with Ramanuja Acharya. He says, this person who is naturally has developed atmarati, or he takes his pleasure only in the self. Atmana eva triptaha. Here, you'll notice in the verse itself also, you see the word eva? how many times? Twice. The first time Prabhupada translates it as certainly, the second time Prabhupada translates it as only, because in fact the word eva means both. The acharyas tend to take it in their commentaries as only. So atmana eva tushta, he only takes pleasure in the atma. And just to make sure that it's entirely clear to us, what is he getting at here? He goes on, he says, atmani eva cha santushtaha, means na udhyana srachandana gita vajita nrityado dharana poshana bhogyadikam sarvam atmaiva yasya tasya atma darshanaya kartavum nividyate. The person for whom there is no duty to perform is not the person who takes pleasure in very pretty gardens like an MVT or the person who enjoys nice garments like the one that was very kindly given to me, or the person who is likes to smear chandan on his forehead in the hot weather, or the person who's very fond of singing and dancing or playing musical instruments or wearing nice clothing or having nice things to eat. He's making it very clear to us exactly what he's talking about. Na annapana vibhiratma vyatiriktaihi atmani eva cha santushtaha. He says, not in anything other than the atma, only in the atma. Not eating, not drinking. So do you drink? Do you eat? If so, you have a duty to perform. You'd better find out what it is. This is the idea. So, swata eva sarvada drishtatma sarupatva, he adds a very significant line at the end. When we're talking about someone who has no duty to perform, we're only talking about the person whose very nature has become different than the conditional nature that impels one towards sense gratification, different than the conditional nature, the sabhava I've already mentioned, that has its corresponding set of swadharmas. We're talking about someone whose very nature has become such that he's incapable of perceiving something other than God. And that's where Madhvacharya takes over. In his commentary, he makes a few very salient points, very, very interesting points. First of all, he says, santushta, the word here is used in line 3. Atmani eva cha santushta, he's only satisfied in the self. So he says, santosh means the happiness that produces tripti. Tripti means satisfaction. And then he quotes some smriti source that santoshas tripti karanam, to justify that interpretation. The tripti means satisfaction, or the sense of, I've had enough and I'm not interested in any more. Just like when you eat a very palatable feast, when you've had your fill, nobody has to tell you. You know, I don't want any more. At least if you're a stable and sober human being. You know. There are some people who just eat and eat and eat and eat, like animals. But we're talking about monadists here, remember? So, the idea is that tripti means that I've had enough. And what have I had enough of? Atmarati. Or atmatripta means he's satiated with everything other than God. Satiated by everything other than God. Why not satiated with God if we're talking about atmatripti or atmarati, a person who only takes pleasure in spirit? Anybody have some ideas about this?
The first look of the
Yeah, that's basically the answer. And Madhvacharya gives us a nice quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, which I'm sure some of you know. Vayam tunavitrapyana uttama shloka vikrame yachrandatam rasajnanam swadu swadu pade pade. When we hear about Krishna, it's pleasing at every step. Every single word is nectarian, and we become so, we're never satisfied hearing about Krishna. At least if we're in healthy Krishna consciousness, that's how it should be. If we're in a diseased condition, then we have all these dharmas that we have to follow. Because the nature of dharma is that it purifies the heart. Sridhar Swami has begun his commentary by pointing out for us, Tadeva na karmanam anambham naishkarmyam ityadina. We've quoted that verse. Agnyasyantaha karana shuddhyartham karma yogam uktva jnaninaha karman upayogam aha yastu iti. in this verse, beginning yes to, he's talking about the person who has come to the stage where he's beyond any question of karma yoga, because he's in a transcendental condition. How do you get to that transcendental condition? Antah karna shuddhi. You have to purify the subtle body. And how do you purify the subtle body? By karma yoga. By karma yoga means doing dharma. Karma and dharma are technically synonymous terms. They're not separate. Karma yoga. So, Madhvacharya therefore says that we're talking about what kind of person who is satisfied in this way. The Eva that he sees in line 1, he says it indicates only a person who's constantly, instead of regularly, engaged in Krishna consciousness. We're all regularly engaged in Krishna consciousness, but are we constantly engaged? That we have to consider. An honest person will be able to give an honest answer for that question. And then in line 3, where the word Eva refers again, he says it refers only to the aparoksha jnani who is in asamprajnata samadhi, not samprajnata. Now this is a technical term that we perhaps don't know unless we've read Prabhupada's purports in chapter 6 very carefully. Anybody know what I'm talking about? He actually describes these two terms. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he has these two ideas of samadhi. Samprajnata samadhi is that state of concentration or trance in which one is completely focused on one thing, but he still is making a conscious effort to focus on that thing. Generally, it's God. That's at least what he says elsewhere in his same sutras. Ishvara pranidhana dva. There are so many things that he suggests you might do, but instead he suggests, or you can just concentrate on God. That's the best thing. But when there's a conscious effort, or when there's awareness of something other than God, from which you should restrain your mind, then that's called samprajnata samadhi. Asamprajnata samadhi, samprajnata. You're conscious of something. You're conscious of the distinction between object and subject, basically. Asamprajnata samadhi means you don't have that consciousness anymore. You no longer see anything that's non-Krishna. This is what what Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto. Bhayam dvitiya vinivesha tasya ityadi. He doesn't see anything second, in other words, dvitiya. He only sees Krishna. This is it's the uttama adhikari. The person who doesn't make any distinction between Krishna and non-Krishna things. Very, very highly advanced condition. This is who this verse is talking about, according to Madhvacharya. So, he also draws from the word manava. We've explained the word manava already. It means, for one thing, somebody who follows manu, the human being, the person who is dharmic, in other words. He takes it a little bit differently. What does he say? He says, manu avabodhane iti dhato. He takes it from the root man, which means to think, to cogitate, to meditate. And Prabhupada incorporates this idea in his purport when he says, also, whose human life is one of self-realization. I'll read the translation in total. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. That's kind of, in many cases, Srila Prabhupada takes the Acharya's commentaries and he incorporates them even into his own translations, what to speak of his own commentary. But this is just an interesting fact that we get from Madhvacharya. So, the important thing here is that we're talking about someone who is asamprajnata samadhi. He says it very clearly. Ato asamprajnata samadho eva etat. This verse refers only to the person who is in that situation. So it's a very, very high state. The word yaha in this verse can refer only to one with all of these qualifications. So that's what Madhvacharya says. Sridhar Swami, we've also described, what does he say about it? He says basically the same things in so many different ways. I mentioned already that most of the acharyas commenting on this verse, they say again and again in different ways, Atmani eva santushto. The person is only satisfied in the Atma, nothing outside. Because in the case of the person in asampragata samadhi, he doesn't even perceive anything outside, so there's no question of him engaging in external things. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says next. He says, Shuddhanta Karanadvat, on account of his subtle body having been purified already, he has no duty to perform. Because the duties is the whole concept of performing dharma is predicated on the assumption that we have some material contamination. And it's intended to purify the mind of that contamination, to lift one out of the realm of infatuation with material desire and bring one to the stage of liberation, the stage of knowledge, the stage of liberated self-awareness or self-realization called Brahmabhuta, which is only the substrate of bhakti. So it's important and it's vitally relevant, these things. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, therefore, he adds, Atmarati, the term here, somebody whose pleasure is in the self, it means basically Atmarama. And we know this also from the Srimad Bhagavatam, don't we? Atmarama shtamunayo nirgantha api rukrame kuravanti haitukim bhakti. Even if a person is Atmarama, liberated in this way, that person still takes the devotional service, which means that there's something transcendental about this service, about this absorption in this duality, which is supramundane, not supermundane, supramundane, beyond this material world. That's an important point. Then he says, again, Atmani eva, only he takes pleasure in the self. Natu bahir vishaya bhoge, not in external pleasures of the senses. Tasya karyam kartavyatvena karmanasti, for that person he has no duty to perform. It's interesting. We know this verse from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. Isn't it interesting? What does that verse refer to? Anybody know? Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natat samasyabhyadika cha drishyate. Yeah. We're talking about the Supreme Lord in that verse. The Supreme Lord has no obligatory duty to perform because he's transcendental to that. When a person is completely linked or joined with the Lord, in union with the Lord and his desire especially, then that person also transcends the relative realm of needs, wants, and obligations, which is the realm of dharma. If you have desires, if you have needs, if you have obligations, if you have attachments, that is the realm of dharma, and you have to perform your activities to fulfill those needs or those desires with respect to these principles. This is the point. But once we come to the platform of asampragnata samadhi, according to Madhvacharya, then these things are no longer relevant because we cannot perceive the illusory realm of duality in which those things are predicated. Does it make sense? We cannot perceive the world of Mahamaya when we're completely absorbed in Yogamaya. This is the thing. Sometimes the analogy is given as of an intoxicated person. When a person is intoxicated, that person is not even aware, is he wearing clothes or not? Right? So the devotee he's carrying on in this way. He makes no conscious effort. He's incapable of directing his senses in any particular manner because he's completely taken over by Krishna in that way. That's asampragyata samadhi. So that's what we're talking about in this verse. It's not talking about anyone who joins the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and chants Hare Krishna to some degree, because most of us are actually very, very conditioned still. It takes some time to reach this stage. At least that's the logic that Krishna mentions in elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. Manushyanam sahasreshu. In the same lecture I mentioned, I was hearing this morning, Prabhupada says sahasreshu means many, many thousands will even attempt this. And out of those who are attempting in that way, hardly one knows me. So Prabhupada gave us some very solid figures. He said, how many persons will become Krishna conscious? One out of billions or trillions. Billions or trillions, Srila Prabhupada said. At least in one lecture he said this. It's something to think about. Of course, we don't want to discourage anyone here. But we should appreciate the rarity of this attainment. And so Baladevi Dapushan follows up, and he concludes here, Yastu madhuktena nishkama karmanam adupasanacha vimrishche chitta darbhane sanjatina dharma bhuta jnanina atma atmanam adarshatasya karma kartatya mityaha yastvati dvadhyam. In the two verses, because there are two verses here, actually 17 and 18, they form a natural pair. They're talking about the same person, the person who has attained asampragata samadhi and is no longer subject to rules and regulations because he does not function within the duality on which those regulations are predicated. So, Baladeva Dabhushan says, these two verses are talking about the person who has seen the Lord and is aware only of the Lord by dint of his awakening, what is called dharma bhuta gyan. Dharma bhuta gyan is a technical philosophical term that I'll explain in a moment. But first of all, he says, he's paraphrasing Krishna here, what I've already spoken about nishkama karma and about worship of me, when those processes have actually purified the subtle body of the living being, vimrishte chitta darpane, and the person's dharma bhuta gyan is awakened, then he has no duty to perform. So what is this dharma bhuta gyan? It sounds like it must be at least comparable to the asampragata samadhi that Madhvacharya mentioned. So dharma bhuta gyan is a philosophical term that means the innate knowledge of the soul, the inherent understanding of all things that resides in the soul. It's simultaneously a substance that we can employ for understanding something, and it's also an attribute that we have. It's hard to figure that out. So I guess you can say an achitta bedabe. But it is the innate knowledge of the soul. It enables consciousness of any particular object, but it does not know those objects in and of itself. It's only a substance, it's not a living entity. So it's an attribute of the soul, and it's innate within the soul, and it can become covered over or it can become expanded according to karma and also according to Krishna's mercy. Especially in Ramanujacharya's Sri Vaishnava, Vishishtadvaita philosophy, it's a very key concept, although he's using it in a slightly different way than Ramanuja would. Baladeva Dabhushan here seems to be talking about what Ramanujacharya would say is what he would term as Sarupa Buddha Gyan. But that's a technicality. Generally, the idea of Dharma Buddha Gyan means the innate knowledge that is intrinsic to the soul and inalienable from the soul. You can only cover it over. You can, as I like to say, you can efface it, but you cannot erase it. So Krishna will sometimes cover you over, if that's what you wish. Sometimes when our karma takes us into the bodies of animals, then we lose all of our awareness of our human life. This is what happens. So this covering and uncovering and the innate wisdom that actually inheres within the soul, eternally, that is called dharma bhuta gyan. It's inseparable from us. We all have it. In fact, any objective knowledge is some sort of modification of dharma bhuta gyan. So, he says here that when your dharma bhuta gyan has been awakened through the purification of your subtle body that results from worshipping me and performing nishkam karma at the same time, the two are not exclusive, usually, necessarily, he says, then there's a question of this verse being relevant to you. in effect, that's his conclusion. Atmanas prakash anandenavalokitena tripto. He says the person is pleased only by the self-effulgent knowledge of the self and the bliss that accompanies that vision of either self. You can say either means the jivatma or the paramatma, because they both go together. And he says, natuannapanadina, just as Ramanujacharya said. He's no longer interested in eating and drinking. Atmani eva chatatrishe santushto. Such a person is only pleased in the Atma. Natun dritte gitadao tasya evam bhutasya taravalokanaya kinchit karmakarjitam nivikite. He's not interested in the singing and the dancing and all that. This is the same point that Ramanuja made. Because his nature has become such that he's only capable of perceiving the Supreme anywhere he looks. Ishta Spurti Pai, right? Savada Jangamana Deke, Ishta Spurti Pai. This is the idea. He only sees Krishna. So this is a very, very advanced stage. And now it's very interesting. Given the examples or the comments that our acharyas have previously made on this verse, they're all relatively tame and pious. Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport, paraphrasing but also updating. He says, such a Krishna conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. Prabhupada is only listing for us sinful activities, because that's what's relevant in the modern world, isn't it? I'm sorry to say. We live in a very adharmic age, and people cannot even conceive of the subtlety of taking pleasure in, say, nice gardens and flower gardens and you know, garlands and chandan and music and these things that were listed previously. People here are interested in illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, robbery, murder, extortion, so many things that we read about in the news. This is what the function of the news is, isn't it? To register all that is loud within the land and broadcast it worldwide. Now we have the internet to do so. Anyway, there's much can be said about that, but probably better not to. So, Srila Prabhupada is also making this point here, that he emphasizes the exalted condition of the person it's mentioned in this verse, and the rarity of that attainment when he puts this word fully here in italics. When a person who is fully Krishna conscious, at the same time, Srila Prabhupada does not want to discourage anyone from actually trying for that level of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, throughout his purport, he doesn't really say all these other things that we hear from the acharyas. He says, due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed. The effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. Actually, that's coming from Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He said, Atmani apahatapapmatvadi gunashtika vishishte sarupe. His very being has begun by nature, so it's qualified by 8 qualifications in particular, beginning with the qualification of being sinless. Have we heard this elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 7, text 28. It's very, very closely related to the ideas in this verse. Yesham tvandagatam papam. When you have become in this state of purification from sin, in particular, and when you're solidly situated in dharma, in other words, in karma yoga, not vikarma yoga, because there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. Think about it. He says, then you can sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service. Before then, it will not happen. And that's why we have the principle, manushyanam sahasreshu, very, very few people. Most of them go after some time. So if you stick around for 30 or 40 years in ISKCON, you will notice that there's very few people around you 30 or 40 years later that were there in the beginning. That's been my experience. So it's not just idle theory here. So Prabhupada says, his duty becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord. Therefore, he no longer has any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. He's being directed personally by Krishna. Once a reporter asked Prabhupada, how do you know what to write in your books? And Prabhupada told him, well, Krishna tells me. And then his disciples thought, well, the reporter's never going to be able to digest that. I've got to somehow unpack this for him. So he explained about Paramatma, where he gives the intelligence from within, and this and that. And Prabhupada said, no, Krishna tells me. Directly, Krishna's telling me. This is the level of advancement that we're talking about here, it would seem. Such a Krishna conscious person is no longer interested in material activities. What to speak of the sinful activities that Prabhupada has mentioned here, just to make it relevant for those of us who are denizens of the Kali Yuga. These are just a few things we can think about. There's so much more here, and even any one of the acharyas, we could go for a long, long time on any of their commentaries. But Srila Prabhupada is giving us the gist of these things in his very, very powerful and very pithy purport here. When you study the acharya's commentaries carefully, you can see that every single sentence in Prabhupada's purports is coming from one of them, generally. Sometimes he adds things that are new, just like here he's added sinful activities instead of pious activities, because that's relevant to the modern day and age. There are some other verses that are like this as well. For example, chapter 4, text number 10, is a purport that could only have been written in the modern age and only by Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, he did so, unlike any of his predecessors. But generally, Prabhupada is giving us the gist of whatever the acharyas have already explained before us. Hopefully, we've been able to illuminate some of that tonight. Anybody have any questions? Please.
First of all, this
microphone Adi.
Thank you for the wonderful class. But I have a few questions. This in spiritual world, Guru Vrindavan, everybody is fully Krishna conscious. But they take pleasure in Katha, Ganyam, Natyam, Gaunapi. So,
yeah.
If we take follow in their footsteps of taking pleasure in Nams and keep them hearing about Krishna, and then as you mentioned about garland, Uddhava says to Krishna that
yeah.
Just by wearing your garlands and taking your prasad, a devotee conquers Maya.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are actually taking pleasure in spiritual activities like this, so and Atma is Krishna, so we are taking pleasure being with Krishna. So I think that should not be kind of
confusing.
Yeah, confusing, because now this shloka would mean like just sit down somewhere and meditate on Krishna. But
yeah.
Prabhupada says in Krishna book that the Brajavasis were not sitting down and meditating, but they were actually whole day engaged in Krishna, various activities in Krishna consciousness.
I remember back in the early 1980s, Tamal Krishna Goswami gave a lecture that was very striking. And he said in his lecture that he visited one community, farm community in North America. And he said he noticed instantly, as soon as he was there, that he was kind of touring the area, and he saw that everyone in the whole farm was completely happy, and they're just mellow, and they're chanting Hare Krishna, and there's no problems whatsoever. It was as if Vaikuntha. And then he said, if this was my zone, he said, everybody would be in complete anxiety. Because that was his move. That's called transcendental duality. And so all these things that the acharyas have mentioned, you know, the kirtan and the music and the flower garlands and everything, of course, that they can all be engaged in devotional service, and they should be. Why should Maya have all the toys? So that principle is coming up in the next chapter when Krishna says, Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanahutam brahmaiva tena gandavyam brahmakarnama samadhinam. A person who is Krishna conscious everything he does becomes Brahman. It becomes on this Atma-tripti platform because he's completely dedicated to the Supreme. And he's engaging everything in that dedication. But it has to be for Krishna. This is the point. Prabhupada says, if you are taking nice palatable prasadam, but your interest is in pleasing your tongue rather than in pleasing Krishna, then you are in Maya. And the same principle, the same logic holds for anything. any form of sensual interaction that may be either used in Krishna's service or used in our own service in the name of service sometimes. You see? So that distinction every individual has to make for himself or for herself, and it's an invisible one. You may be exposed or you may not be exposed, but each of us has the responsibility, which Madhvacharya calls this faculty sakshi, conscience, you know, the decision of conscience every one of us has to make. And the power to make the right decision comes by the through the agency of the holy name. When we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then we are purified, and our motives are purified, and we can do the right thing, even if we're strongly inclined not to do that thing, you see? Is that okay?
One more question. One person from Dr. asked, if it, from a college, the passing rate is only 1 in 1,000. What is the point of going to a college, as you are mentioning? So he was kind of use the Gita Shloka to discourage to enter into bhakti. Mm. But I want to mention, as you said, not everybody will stick to Krishna consciousness, and not everybody will. My understanding is, out of millions of people, people will not accept that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. And somebody who accept that, he will go back to Godhead, because Krishna, Prabhupada says in the 10th canto, when Devaki was having Krishna in her womb, and Kasa didn't kill because he was just knowing that Vishnu anyhow cannot be killed. And Prabhupada said that's why he got liberation. So what on top of those devotees were constantly glorifying Krishna and discussing his pastimes. So I mean, that's why I put in an encouraging manner that okay, many millions of people won't come to Krishna and accept Krishna Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Syaritha Parantu. Neha Vikramana Shosti Pratyavarana Vidite, Krishna says.
And somebody sticks that he'll go back to Godhead, surely.
Krishna says that, you know, you may not go back to Godhead, that's fine. But as long as you're doing this thing, as long as your intention is to please Krishna, at whatever level of devotional service you plug in at, then you're going to begin at a higher level next time whenever you resume your practice.
And
that process goes on life after life for as long as you want. But you will go back. This is the point.
And also Krishna says, Bahavo Jnana Tapasam. Many people have actually come.
Puta Mabhava. They approach Bhava when they're purified. This is the same principle. Puta means purified. Madhava Magata. They come to Bhava.
One third question is that when Krishna says Swarpamasya Api Dharmasya Trayatu Mahatobayat, how do we quantify Swarpamasya? How much little is sufficient enough not to try the model?
This is an excellent question. You do not quantify it. Or if you do, you do so subjectively, and you're conscious of your subjective assessment. You understand? You cannot judge. Certainly you cannot judge anyone else, but we actually cannot even judge ourselves. Therefore, we're always in a little bit of a mystery. Someone asked me this morning, long, long time devotee, that I respect very much, how do we know when Srila Prabhupada is pleased with us? You know, someone asked him a question, how do we know when Krishna is pleased with our service? Do you know what Prabhupada answered?
When he tells you he's pleased.
So the point is that we may be in a little bit of doubt at all times, and that's healthy. That's healthy. Because what do we do when we become confident? We become very chuffed. We become very stupid. We fall down. You see? So Krishna keeps us a little bit on our toes by making it very unclear. That's mercy. And sometimes the spiritual master is like that. Sometimes, quite often. Srila Prabhupada generally, devotees who had Srila Prabhupada's association were always very careful and a little bit afraid. Because at any moment he could turn around and just blast them. And they knew that. See? So these are the ways that Krishna works. Anything else?
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. The point you made that tells me what to say,
yeah.
And the devotee wanted to clarify that, and Prabhupada said, no, Krishna tells me what to say. So, on more than one occasion, I have experienced being Prabhupada's guard, sitting outside of his room late at night, usually along with one other devotee. And on two occasions, we heard Srila Prabhupada talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was dictating using his dictaphone, we didn't have tape recorders at that time. There would be intermediate clicks and clacks and clicks and clacks of the machine going on and off. But this was a conversation Srila Prabhupada was having with someone, and they were answering and talking back and forth. And we were befuddled, who is he speaking to? You know, so we're thinking, you know, sometimes Prabhupada said Narada Muni would come to visit him. And is Narada Muni in there? Or who's speaking to Srila Prabhupada? So in this case, as Prabhuji had said, it very well could have been Krishna telling him how to proceed in his translation of Srimad Bhagavatam or whatever text he happened to be working on at that particular time.
There are so many things that we could say about Srila Prabhupada while he was translating, and events that devotees have witnessed, and that there's so much to say about that, but I don't know if we have time.
It's
too much off the topic.
One other point is that, how do you know when the spiritual master is pleased? A good example is that if he gives you a mission to perform, and you do that mission so expertly that he stops whatever he's doing and he comes personally to see you, you know, these.
Or embraces you.
Yes.
Tamal Krishna Goswami walked in and said, Prabhupada, the land is yours. And Prabhupada embraced him and said, now go take rest. If you know the story of how the land was acquired in Mayapur, it was
yes.
Tremendous blood, sweat, and tears. So, okay, anything else?
Isn't it also Prabhupada, like in the purports, clearly say the first instruction of the spiritual master is to chant 16 rounds?
The first instruction of the spiritual master is to chant 16 rounds.
And
yes.
He gets it again and again.
Yeah, and if you read Srila Prabhupada's letters, you'll also see that generally the things that he emphasizes virtually to everyone that he writes is that follow the principles, chant your 16 rounds, attend the programs, associate with devotees. It's a simple, simple thing.
And
it's not complicated.
And if you're doing that sincerely, I think you can assume that you're
Prabhupada.
Okay,
okay.
And also I heard that one thing is that Prabhupada says that only complaint is that, you know, my disciples don't read my
don't
books.
Don't read my books.
So
more than once he said that.
So
that's
if
true.
He consciously make an effort to read his books every day, so we can also say that at least Prabhupada is not my that complaint against me.
Yeah, if we read Prabhupada's books, then so many things will be clear to us that are otherwise not clear to us. It's simple. We just have to endeavor that much. We have to demonstrate our sincerity to that. I mean, we sing every day. Why? Prabhupada asked us to sing. Guru Mukha Padma Vakka Chite Te Kodi Aikya. Do you mean it? What does it mean? I only want the words emanating from his lotus mouth that they become one with what my natural, spontaneous, heartfelt desire is. Do we really mean that? Arna kari homani asha, without entertaining any other desire? Do we really mean that? This is the point. Okay, so I have to go. Oh, the one more question. I'm sorry.
Well, no, just one comment on that. In a lecture on this very sloka that was read today, Srila Prabhupada says when one reaches to this very high platform, it does not mean they stop chanting their 16 rounds, it does not mean they no longer have to come to the Mangal Arati program in the morning to attend Guru Puja or to attend Srimad Bhagavatam class. They will continue to do these activities in order to set an example for those
And not only that, but also because it has become their nature.
Yes.
This is the significance of Ramanuja's statement, Svata eva sarvata drishtatma surupatva, and Baladeva's statement similarly, Sarvada lokitatma surupatva. Their sarup, their essential being, has become
it's
such.
That's their lifestyle.
It's what they are.
That's all they can do.
Okay, last question.
I think it's a very obvious question, but I just want confirmation. The last word, for him there is no duty. So this word duty is not the same duty that Krishna uses in the previous verses, like the duty of dharma.
It is. Kardia, the word is used, kardia. And kardia is a general word, but it does mean duty. It's something you have to do.
But there is no duty, so Arjuna wouldn't have to battle them. He's performed what he's saying here.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking a question that if Arjuna is on this platform, then he no longer has to fight.
Yeah.
Except that Krishna is telling him to fight. And when Krishna tells you to fight, you follow what Krishna says. He may not have it as his ordinary worldly responsibility. In that sense, he's free from duty. But the point is that even in the liberated state of Atmarama, as we quoted from the Bhagavatam earlier, a person still has to perform devotional service because that is the transcendental perfection of dharma. Sarva dharman paritijyamam ekam sharanam vraja. Even you give up all the dharmas, that's fine, but you do not give up this dharma because this is the essential and inalienable dharma. It is called the jiva dharma, or the parta dharma.
And because Arjuna was perplexed, he wasn't on that level.